Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts, sports journalist David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves, chillin', talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd at Season 8, Episode 52, and the Steelers are 9-2. But Dave, Steelers didn't do it the way fans would have liked, or certainly the way I or you expected last night. They get the win 31-28 on a last-second 53-yard field goal by Chris Boswell. Props to the Boz for getting it done. But this is a game that there's a lot to get into. But at the end of the day, the goal is to win football games. They turned it over three times. They gave up three touchdown passes more than 39 or more, and they got a W. Was this a ridiculously bad performance that they should be embarrassed about? Was this the sign that good teams beat bad teams even when they don't play well? Somewhere in between? I mean, how do you feel this morning after the anxiety of an entertaining but not ideal game last night?
You're not going to catch me like that off guard. I've had four pots of coffee already since I climbed out of the sack. The correct answer to all your questions is yes. and then from there, I don't know. I changed my site to Yeah But Depot. And that would probably be right anyway to have the butt in there, because a lot of people think it's ass anyway. The podcast could change to the Yeah But Podcast. Man, where the hell do you start with this one?
Let's actually start with something that got looked at. So again, it's sometimes the media, it's amazing to me, the Steeler media, when things don't go well early in games, they love to point it out, you know, point it out and point it out and point it out again. I mean, if it's not perfect, Steeler media is often, I think, as biting as any of the fan base. Now, having said that, let's talk about Mike Tomlin's comments about, you know, looking forward to the New England Patriot game. Because, my God, when a head coaches across the board say absolutely nothing, and we criticize them continually for saying absolutely nothing. But Tomlin suggests that the New England game is a huge game coming up in week, whatever it is, 15 or so. And all of a sudden, everybody, you know, wants to put the Steelers' performance on that. How could he possibly be looking ahead as if they didn't even practice last week?
Well, everybody complains that he's not candid enough during his press conferences, that not that revealing of a coach, that a very even keel, cliche-driven, won't point the fingers at his players, won't look ahead and give any sound bites to a future matchup. And then Tony Dungy, who a guy that he worked for, obviously, years ago in Tampa Bay, sits down and asks him not to give coach speak during an interview, and he doesn't. I mean, what do you want the guy to do? Lie? And people would probably, be able to read through that. Dungy probably knows him better than a lot of people who have even covered the team for X amount, you know, since 2007 or whatnot. He was asked if he thinks this is a Super Bowl team, and if he thinks that they should and could win the Super Bowl. And he gave an honest answer. I mean, what do you want him to say? Well, you know, I don't know. One game at a time.
Is he going to say, yeah, right, one game at a time or no?
Yeah.
The answer is
the nuke lelouch, you know,
right.
Standard cliche-driven drivel, if you will. And then, you know, after that, he's asked about the Patriots game. And, yeah, I mean, we talk, how many times have we talked about it in the last 6 weeks? Let's save the Patriots game until the Patriots game happens. With that said, you know that behind closed doors, now not with the players, probably not, But, I mean, I don't think Mike Tomlin in the film room sits there on a week-by-week basis and say, look, if you do this wrong against the Indianapolis Colts, what do you think Tom Brady and the Patriots are going to do to you? Now, when he's in the coach's room, do they probably say, look, we got to get this fixed by the time we play the Patriots? Maybe. I mean, it's probably human nature, but, you know, how did all of his quotes go with Dungy? You know, an elephant in the room. We know it's a big game. We'd have to be, you know, under a rock to not know that everybody's looking forward to that. So he finally addresses it. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's going to be a big game and potentially the rematch of that. If both teams take care of business the way they're supposed to, and then he gets driven into the ground. Even if they would have blown the Packers out last night, 42-13, like many of us thought that they could have and should have done, we'd still be talking about today Mike Tomlin looking ahead to the Patriots. So, damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Yeah, damned if you do, damned if you don't. I think it was certainly some of that was a reflection of the Packers coming out and getting a lead at early in the game. And it's just, you know, the larger point here is if anybody thinks that Mike Tomlin and the coaching staff or the players prepared differently, not that it's not human nature for players and performance. Look, you know, if you're going out and you're in sixth grade, doesn't matter if you're playing the best team from the rival junior high school that you're in that you go to, you might be more excited for that game than when you're playing, you know, some other school you know isn't very good. It's human nature, you know, beating up on your little brother versus playing your next door neighbor. I don't know. It just the analogy is the adrenaline and the focus may be a little bit better, but I guarantee you the coaching staff didn't prepare any differently in terms of intellectually or putting the guys through the paces. And the fact is, he gave it an honest answer. And, I don't think that's the reason, you know, we can point to, we'll get to point out the factors in the game, but I don't think it was anybody concerned about playing the Patriots with the reason that the Packers put up 28 points last night. Okay, so Dave, that's point one. Let's just get the injury stuff behind us. As expected, Juju didn't go and Vance McDonald didn't go. And then there was a little bit of a surprise to me, not to some others, that Mike Mitchell went, so he was good to go. So he was in there. And then the inactives, the only things to kind of point out here are that it looks like Matt Filer may have, you know, it's taken a while, but Gerald Hawkins may have surpassed him as the swing tackle. So Filer was inactive and Hawkins was active. Cam Sutton was active and James Harrison wasn't active. And the rest of it was kind of as expected, right?
Yeah, James Harrison, look, unless you have an extra helmet laying around right now, it's still going to be hard for this guy that's yet to pass 30 defensive snaps. The thing with Mitchell, I think Mitchell
is that 30 on the season.
30, he has yet to pass 30 defensive snaps on the season.
Yeah, I'll tell you, it's fascinating with the way James Harrison finished last year and played in the playoffs. I think most of us would have said James Harrison might play 30 snaps in the opening game, and it's just. I don't know if it's, you know, it's going to be somebody's, it's either going to be in James's autobiography or somebody's story down the road is, you know, why didn't you play in the 2017 season when you came back? And they, you know, it's either they're going to be like, well, they wanted me to be more of a coach and a locker room leader. And, you know, I knew I was past my prime, or I have no freaking idea, because it's a little bit of an odd story.
James is a pass rusher. End of story. That's his skill set. He is a pass rusher. The Steelers obviously like to drop their linebackers, both sides.
Although James is stout on the edge, setting the edge. He's not going to drop into coverage for sure.
Right. I mean, he can still set the edge against the run. Yeah, but I mean, if you're talking about anything else where you're you would have to limit him when he's on the field
to the
line of scrimmage, because you're not going to be able to do the things that you can do with him with TJ Watt. And that's in the story where James Harrison can make impacts in games, and where he's probably most valuable to you is late in games when the Steelers have the lead and they know that the opposing quarterback has to drop back and pass, i.e. the game against the Chiefs. And even then, that was a tasty matchup that we all knew about heading into that game with him versus Eric Fisher. It's just, I mean, it's the truth of the matter. His, you can, yes, James can drop to the, can drop in, you know, 7 yards to the flat, but that's not good enough anymore. We saw T.J. Watt make a play over the middle on Jordy Nelson, of all people, a pass breakup. Which was a huge play. Is James Harrison making that play, David?
Yeah, I mean, he's 3 steps behind and away he goes.
Right. So, you know, look, he's a great pass rusher to have in the can in case an injury crops up. But even if he does dress because of injury later on down the season, unless that injury is to T.J. Watt, he's still not going to play a lot of snaps. And really, you're probably going to lose an aspect of your defense if he does have to play a large portion of the snaps. All right, look, I mean, we've rehashed James Harrison a ton this year. If folks can't deal with what we presented already out there, you know, the heck with them. Cameron Sutton, good to see him dress. Obviously, you know, people are already clamoring for him to get on the field defensively. Sorry, folks, that's not going to happen unless there's an injury there. He's missed way too much time. The big surprise was Mike Mitchell, I think, dressing due to the fact that
By the way, Cam Sutton didn't play a snap, as far as I can tell. Didn't play a snap on special teams. Didn't see the field.
Right. I mean, he is a guy that's going to struggle to get on the field, period, right now. And Mike Mitchell was a big surprise, being as how he practiced full on Wednesday, went to limited the last two days. So that was a surprise active there. Gerald Hawkins dressing over a guy like Matt Filer. Hey, you know, at least that's happening now. So that's something to be positive about. To be honest with you, David, I did not pay close attention to the whatever 5 snaps that Gerald Hawkins played against the Packers as an extra tight end. I will once the All 22 gets out there. You know, the rest we kind of knew what was going to happen there. So at least Hawkins is dressing, so that's a good sign. And, okay, the injuries, of course, McDonald down. Boy, it sure would be nice to get that guy back here over the course of these next 2 games against division rivals, and then, of course, the game against the Patriots. Hayden, you know, keep your fingers crossed he makes it back for the game against the Patriots. That's that. What would you like to talk about next?
Yeah, so just you look at this game and – you know, there are a lot of things here. And just to, you know, to start at 30,000 feet, again, look, the Steelers turned the ball over 3 times. So they lost the turnover battle by 3. And they gave up 3 long touchdown passes. I mean, if I gave you the stat sheet and didn't show you the turnovers in this game, I mean, 28-15, Steelers first down. Total yards, 351-245. So they outgained them by more than 100 yards. And you know, that's mostly in net passing yards. The Steelers have 4 sacks. The Packers have 1. You know, the Packers have a slight advantage in penalties. The Steelers had 5 for 45. The Packers had 3 for 27. Steelers are 8 for 13 on third downs. The Packers were good. They were 6 for 13. They're both for 1 for 1 on fourth downs, and the Steelers outpossessed them by 7 minutes. I mean, stats are, you know, the Steelers outplayed the Packers, but, you know, you can't ignore the fact that, as you know, Dave, you so often point out on the talk stats, you know, the Packers getting, you know, huge touchdowns, you know, double explosive plays, big long touchdowns, and 3 turnovers. So do you take out of the game, and you can go either way with this. Obviously, both are important, that the Steelers were sloppy in the sense of the turnovers and execution on these big plays. I mean, we'll get into each play and why it happened. Or do you take out the fact that, you know, they were never down by more than a touchdown. They did what they needed to do to, you know, get ahead in the game. Then the defense gave up a long touchdown drive. And then they did, it was a really amazingly good job to go win that game in the limited time and timeouts that they had at the end of regulation. And the kicker comes through with a 53-yard field goal. So, look, you can jump on either side of the equation here. Certainly, it's not how I expected it to go down, but I guarantee you, if these two teams played again this weekend, Vegas would still have the Steelers as a 13-point favorite. I'd still pick them to win, you know, whatever I picked them to win, 41-14 or whatever. They're a better team than the Packers. The Packers did some things well and made the game close. So, Dave, I, you know, what is the So I guess my question to you is, you know, let's have some direction. Let's start on the defensive side of the ball. Which bothered you more? The fact that, again, they gave up three long touchdowns, or with the game on the line and 5 minutes left, the Packers, much like the Browns in week one, were able to drive the length of the field with the Browns did it with DeShone Kizer, the Packers did it with Brett Hundley, were able to drive the length of the field and score a touchdown. I mean, they both suck, but does one bother you more than the other in terms of looking forward?
You just asked me more questions than my old man asked me when I was 15 and got thrown in jail for being drunk in the middle of a highway holding up letters from a sign that said beer. Okay, I don't even know where to start there. Look back, kind of going back through my head what you just said. First, the anomaly of the talk stat. You finish a game minus three in the talks. You know, 80% of the time you're going to lose that game, and then throw in the fact that we haven't even yet come up with a good formula for the explosive plays when they're double and triple category, and thus the effect of those on winning percentages. It's quite a minor miracle that they did win that game. How did you end it there with the question?
Let's start with the defense, because I think we're going to like come out of this saying that the offense played well except for the turnovers, and those things count, obviously. The defense didn't play that well. And, you know, you tweeted that, you know, aside from three series, and I think that's exactly right, the defense didn't play well. So which part of the defense is more damning going forward? The last drive with the game on the line, or the three blown assignments, long touchdowns?
Man, I hate to cop out here, but the answer to your question is yes. I mean, it really is, David, because I can live with explosive plays. I can live with four explosive plays for 20 to 28 yards a game. The problem is, and we talked about this how many times now in the course of the last 4 weeks, the most troubling aspect of that is the fact that these double and triple explosive plays are ending up in the end zone. If you were to present that same question to me, Dave, they gave up five explosive plays. None of them ended up in the end zone. And then, you know, the final drive when it mattered most, I would obviously take the final drive. But I think, considering that what's happening on these double and triple explosive plays, you have to be concerned about that. I don't think it lowers it. I mean, obviously, if you put the pieces of the puzzle and the timeline together, and knowing how things have transpired, you're going to say, well, look, they, you know, if the defense makes a stop on that final drive, all is well in Steelerland. But I don't think you can dissect it that way. So I'm going to cop out, and I'm going to say the answer to your question is yes.
Yeah, I put a poll up on Twitter last night with over 1,000 responses. It was 3-1, kind of 75% said that explosive plays, and a third said the last drive. I'm with you. I mean, the last drive is really bothersome.
Wait. What won that poll? I haven't seen it. What won the poll?
The 75% said the explosive plays, the long touchdowns, were more troublesome than the last drive.
Okay, but you
25%.
You did clarify explosive play touchdowns and not just explosive plays, right?
I said what? Let me read to you exactly how the poll said so that I get it.
Well, it probably doesn't matter. Yinzers don't read them correctly anyway. But
what has you more concerned about the Steelers' defense? So, you know, the three long touchdowns, or, you know, the touchdown drive with the game on the line. And it was 3-1 on the three long touchdowns. Now, let's look at the touchdowns, because, you know, we can compare them to the touchdowns that have happened over the past couple weeks. And, you know, look, you're going to hear forever from people, and there is some truth to this, and Dave and I will always admit this, and you know, we're going to go with the best we can on this stuff. And then when the All-22 comes out, we'll have a more refined view. Alex puts a lot of this stuff on, you know, does a great job along with, you know, with everybody else on the site, trying to analyze it. Yeah, we're not in the defensive huddle. We're not in the scheming over the course of the week. This is kind of the all-time caveat of anybody who does this stuff. But it clearly looked, and, you know, Collinsworth suggested it. You know, he's a smart guy doing a great job as an analyst. He already carries the guy across the field when it looks like he has, you know, the deep third on his side. Mike Mitchell's standing there. That's what is so odd about it. Artie's running almost into Mike Mitchell as he follows the receiver, and then Cobb comes late down that left sideline, and it's a throw that any, you know, high school quarterback should make to get it to him and waltz into the end zone. And Dave, I don't know, did you see it differently?
To me, it's exactly how Alex broke it down this morning. It's a cover three versus a corner wheel flat combination. Okay, in other words, zone underneath, cover three on the back end. Artie has got to pass off that post and then pay attention to the wheel on that aspect. Watt, remember, there's a flat out underneath Watt on that. Yep. So that combination stresses not only the dropping defender on that side, but the cornerback as well. And here's the thing: the Packers have shown that combination of corner, wheel, flat this season. So it's been on tape. And if you look at Mike Tomlin's reaction and try to read his lips, which Alex
it isn't hard,
right? It looks like he says on the effing film, okay. Now he might, whether or not that's what he said, I don't know. I'm not a professional at reading lips by any stretch of the imagination, but in short, it gives you the sense, unless there was some call or something that we don't know about. I mean, do you really expect, Watt to carry?
There's just no way that Artie can think that J.J. Watt's carrying that guy down the sideline. It's just not possible. I mean,
or T.J. Watt.
Yeah, T.J. Watt, right. You know, we talked about him, you know, making a play on Jordy over the middle of the field. Now, Jordy was 6 yards from the line of scrimmage. I mean, and we've seen when the Steelers do so, they'll rotate their linebackers left, and T.J. will slide inside and make some plays there. We've seen that often on film so far this year in terms of, and then they'll bring guys often, you know, Hilton out of the slot from that other side. So they'll do some things differently in coverages, but he's 6 yards from the line of scrimmage. He's not carrying a wide out, in this case, Cobb, down the sideline. There may be a time over the course of the season where he'll carry a tight end or a back down the middle of the field. He's not carrying a guy outside the numbers down the field. He's just not doing it.
Yeah, it's a tough matchup anyway, even if he was. Do you expect him to win that? A wide receiver against an outside linebacker? I mean, why would you set yourself up to even lose that way? I mean, look, it was a great route combination. They were probably going to get caught either way. But at least here's the thing with Artie, and we've said it time and time again. He tries to do too much at times, and doing too much ends up being way not enough, if that makes sense. And if that post route beats you, then that's on Mike Mitchell. Okay, then that's who the finger gets pointed at. At least everybody was where they were supposed to be. You know, unless we hear anything different, it's hard to imagine that was not on Artie Burns. And if it was, I mean, this is a pattern of one or two times a game, him getting caught not following.
Yeah, you can't give up a touchdown game. I mean, that's just insane.
Right, right. So, I mean, you know, until we hear or see anything different, that's the way I think you have to diagnose that play. And look, Artie Burns is, you know, I hear and see the bust tag already being thrown out with out there with Artie Burns. to me, he's far from that. But, I mean, he's obviously not where he should be in his overall development, especially when it comes to football IQ and X's and O's. He's not there. Now, he's making some progress, I think, as a tackler. But still, when you're dealing with him in zone concepts, anything outside of man or bump and run, that seems to be where most of his issues are showing up with him. He is a talent. He is a talented player, and getting on into the latter stages of this season, you would expect him to be further along than he is with the amount of games that he's played in. Does he need to pay attention more in the film room? Probably needs to be the last one leaving, and he might be. Let's not call Artie Burns a bust just yet.
Yeah, it's not a good term. He's the starter on a 9-2 team. I mean, he's not a bust. He's a guy who hasn't played up to the level that's expected of him to this point. I think Artie played well last year. I think at the start of the season, he did some good things. He's not known as, we've known his, the way his bio sets up is Artie's a bump and run corner who can play man, who's not necessarily the most willing tackler, the guy that you want out there. He missed a couple last night. He made a couple last night, but this is the NFL and you're a first round pick. So expectations are higher than that level. So he's got to do better.
The good thing with him, it looks like he doesn't have the Cortez Allen syndrome, where it looks like he's really, really down on himself.
He is not lacking confidence. He is not lacking in confidence, right, as you saw when he made that tackle at touchdown.
Right.
Man. Okay. So let's do the second touchdown, the screen pass, and this to me, and I this one, Collinsworth on the fly, I thought did a great job of suggesting what Ryan Shazier was doing. And if you'll remember, look, this is a screen where, and again, I don't know this for 100%, but I liked Collinsworth's analysis where he said, it looked like Shazier was trying to show blitz to Hundley to confuse him. And then he would, get into his responsibility of getting to the back and blow up the play, or, maybe make a splash play. Obviously, Shazier wasn't able to do that. He got caught up in the wash. And then if you watch that, I put a short video up when it happened on Twitter that you can see if you haven't seen it yet. They have a camera view from behind the play where you can see both safeties. The Steelers are playing two deep safeties. And again, it's hard to tell from the angle exactly what the defensive coverage is. But you can see the two deep safeties see this play develop. And they both come up. And Sean Davis – it looks like they – honestly, if you watch this, and I've watched it 30 times. To me, Dave, it looks like the safeties don't know where the ball is almost, because they both go past the ball carrier. And Sean Davis actually comes from – if you're looking at the play from the behind the quarterback's perspective, Sean Davis is on the right, so on the left of the Steelers defense. He comes all the way across the runner and takes one of the linemen out of the play, and the runner is still 3 yards behind him. So the blocker's to the left of the runner. Davis runs past that, runs into the lineman, and then Mitchell doesn't get there. And it's another cakewalk into the end zone. And so, it looks like maybe Shazier, didn't – he was – if it's man coverage in this situation with too deep, like Collinsworth was suggesting, that he's got the responsibility. But you have two safeties deep in the middle of the field. Their job is to clean up anything that gets, 5-10 yards past the line of scrimmage. They've got to be there to make that play, and neither of them was there.
Well, it looks like design screen, right? Yep. To me, it looks like a design screen against man coverage with two deep safeties on the field. First and foremost, I'll have to look a little bit closer to play. I don't know if it's more of a hug. To me, it's more of a hug by Shazier on the running back on the play. And then once he realizes it is design screen, if Shazier goes over the top of the second level offensive lineman, it's probably still a first down. What was it? Third and seven or six or eight or something like that. If he goes over the top of the offensive lineman at the second level instead of trying to go underneath him, he probably ends up bringing that running back down at some point. He chose to go under, and was late. Okay, that's first and foremost. Second, you know, you can't have three guys, Sean Davis, Mike Mitchell, and Mike Hilton, all running past the play thinking they're trying to force the thing back inside to help, because they all are the help.
Right. I mean, Sean Davis is coming from the other side of the field. He has to know he is last guy who's going to have an angle and a look.
And you look at all three of them, Davis, Davis, Mitchell, and Mike Hilton, all overrun. And someone wrote on Twitter today, well, if William Gay was faster, he would have tracked that down. Well, if the other four people involved in the play to do something maybe different, then William Gay doesn't have to worry about chasing that running back down. Just blown everything on that. That, to me, David, that one's kind of, I don't know if I want to say easier to swallow.
It wasn't a blown coverage. It was blown execution. And, I don't have any idea what Sean Davis was thinking. It was just stunning to me watching it live, because, I mean, I said it out loud, you know, because he ran past the play. And when you're 20 yards behind the line of scrimmage, lining up 20 yards deep, you get the whole point of being there is you get great perspective on what's developing in front of you. And so you don't. So that's why, you know, we're so critical sometimes of safeties taking bad angles. When you got to go to the sideline, it's a little different than when the play's in front of you, developing in front of you like that one did. And those guys, you know, it was terrible safety play. Hey, Shazier missed, but.
Yeah, and here's the thing. Sean Davis didn't even make that offense. He made the job for that offensive lineman out in front easier because he didn't even attack him, you know.
No, didn't. Right. He kind of soft-shouldered him. And the guy wouldn't, you know, non effect. Nothing happened.
Right. At least cause a little bit of traffic there. You know?
Yeah. Clean them out. Something. I mean, it was ridiculous. To me, it might have been okay. So then the next play. So we'll go back to Sean to Cody Sensabaugh, the third touchdown. When Cody Sensabaugh got beat on the post route against the Colts, there were a lot of things going on in that play where, you know, what was going on with the slot receiver, you know, who was, you know, what about the safety in the deep middle of the field? A good throw by Jacoby Brissett to the wide side of the field because he didn't have to worry about a deep safety there who'd been looked off or was out of the play, had stepped up. I can't remember exactly. But it was a good throw, and it was a good route, and it was good play design. This is just getting beat on a move. And it happens. We see Marcus Peters play. You know, we've seen Artie jump stuff all the time. You know, Cody Sensabaugh. I mean, there's not much to say here. This is in your backyard. Run a stop and go. I mean, that's all it is. Is Davante Adams, you know, puts the brakes on, and Cody Sensabaugh's, you know, flying up there to make the play. And it's, again, it's a high school quarterback makes that throw. It was an easy throw. And you know, I don't know what, and there's not a lot to break down on film or play design or anything. You just got beat on a double move.
Yeah, I mean, look to me again. Once again, you know, cover three there. Adams comes off, chops his feet, and I thought Brett Hundley, I thought, did a great job with kind of the shoulder shimmy there. Looking, I mean,
yep.
Alex has a great still of this, of Adams breaking down on his route, and he is definitely his butt is sitting there.
Oh yeah, he really puts the brakes on hard. I mean, look, Collinsworth suggested that Adams is now the number one. I don't know, Jordy's a great receiver, but Adams is a good receiver, and he sold it, and he won.
Right, and he won, and that is going to happen at times. So, once again, the most concerning aspect to me of that play is not that Cody Sensabaugh got beat with a double move. It's the fact that he and Mike Mitchell still failed to get Adams down on the ground after the reception. To me, that is the most damning of it.
And it's a pattern now. It is absolutely a pattern. We saw Golden and Mitchell. We've just seen the safeties miss on these plays where the key is, as you've said many times, look, a 40-yard gain when it's, you know, they're on their own 40 means they still got 20 yards to go, and you hold them to a field goal, you get a break and get a turnover, whatever. You score, you know, that's it. You got to play that. You got to make them earn the end zone after that, and they haven't done any of that.
Yeah, exactly right. And look, I mean, you look, guys are going to get beat. People still forget that we're talking about professionals, 32 professional teams. Guys are paid, coaches are paid to scheme against you to beat you on certain plays. And how many times, David, do we say 5 to 6 plays? You start, you know, the difference sometimes in a lot of these games are 5 to 6 plays. And it's really the case, and if you know, if you prevent that play from home running you, you know, it's pretty good odds that that you're going to maybe at least be able to hold them to a field goal. And like it or not, the difference between a touchdown and a field goal is 4 points last time I checked, and that's huge in games, especially when you're talking about kind of undermanned teams. And this is becoming a pattern. Of what, 5 times in the last, what, 3 games now? The Steelers have given up, what, 6 in total plays of touchdowns of 50 or more yards. That's huge, okay? So, once again, yes, Cody Sensabaugh got beat. Yes, put a demerit or whatever on his stat sheet for him. The most damaging aspect, in my opinion, of that play was the fact that they did not get him on the ground down the field. Now with Burns getting beat, you had no chance of getting him down on the ground after he beat you. We talked about the dump off to the running back. You know, that of the three maybe is the easiest to swallow, because how many times are you going to really see a running back take a, you know, 4-yard dump off and take it to the house there? So if I were to rank them as far as concern, it would probably be the Burns, the one against Burns, then the one against Sensabaugh, and then the one to the running back last. You hate to see your cornerback get beat with a double move, but it does. Look, at least tackle the guy maybe, right?
I think your point's right. The thing about, you know, Artie blew the coverage. That's a mental mistake. That's what happened in that touchdown. The physical mistakes for me on the first touchdown, it was Davis and Mitchell. And on the second one, as you say, it was the guys making the tackle. Look, guys make plays. It happens. The other team's going to make plays. Okay. So the point is that you're not supposed to be giving up touchdowns. You're supposed to, okay, they get a splash play, whatever, but you don't give up a touchdown. So Shazier didn't get it done. Mitchell and Davis got to make the play. Sensabaugh didn't get it done. You know, the safety's got to make the play again, and they didn't do it. So, you know, obviously Mike Mitchell's getting damned here, and I think rightly so. You know, he had another terrible missed tackle earlier in the game. It was not his best effort.
And here's the thing with Sensabaugh. He tries to, if you're going to get beat by – you know, I'm not a huge Tlaib fan, but and I think – who is the other one? Antonio Cromartie, I think, is a good example. Him and Tlaib, I think, are great examples of this. When they get beat on double moves, you're not
– they kill guys.
They're going to tackle the guy, you know.
Yeah, they kill the guy. They kill the guy.
Right.
They kill him.
They're not going to home run you. You're going to get a 15-yard penalty, but I'll be damned if you're going to catch that football.
Right. It's going to be defensive holding and a forearm shiver to the freaking head.
Right. So, you know, you got that in this aspect, you probably wish Cody Sensabaugh was a little bit longer, because if he's a little bit longer, maybe he does tackle Adams, and then that just goes into, oh, well, you know, 15-yard penalty, live to fight another day.
Okay, so that's the majority of the defense. Let's just finish up on the defense and get to the offense. I mean, one of the things about this game that I think was a bit unique from what we've seen lately is the Steelers got beat on the line of scrimmage, I would say, for the first 30 or 35 minutes of the game on both lines of scrimmage. I didn't think they were particularly good. But when the Steelers' defense had to stiffen in starting in the third quarter, there was a period there where they went 9 straight plays where, you know, that included the turnover series where they, you know, they basically got a stop around midfield And that was the sack by LT Walton, the play by TJ Watt on Jordy Nelson, and then a sack by Cam. And then the next series, I think it was maybe the turnover series, and they went the next series was deep in their own territory, and the Packers went, you know, tackle for loss, incomplete, sack by Cam, and then I think after the turnover by Ben, the Bell fumble, it was incompletion. They were really good for that stretch, and Cam obviously had a good game, but I don't know that there's a lot of other guys on the defense that you're giving, you know, props to. LT Walton, I think, only played three plays and had a sack, so he's going to look reasonably good. But Dave, just overall the defensive performance, what'd you think?
Yeah, it felt like against the run at times they got manhandled. It did. Dave, do you have your calculator or your shoes off here?
Got my shoes off.
All right. Brett Hundley dropped back, let's see, 30 times in the game. Okay? So that's our starting point. 30 dropbacks. How many scrambles did he have? Did he have any scrambles in the game? I don't think he did. He did have that one for 6 yards, but let's go 30 dropbacks here. What was the total yardage of the four explosive plays that he had? That was, I'm fixing to rattle these off to you, so get your calculator ready. 55 and 54, that's 99, plus 39.
That's 109.
See, I'm glad you have a calculator.
And then 39, so 148.
And then 25.
So 170, 73.
Okay. Subtract 173 from his total passing numbers, which is 245.
So we got 27 and 45. So we got 72. I think I'm doing this in my head. Yeah, so sounds right. 72.
All right. Then we get to subtract the sack yards, right? 18 yards.
Okay, so 54.
I told you to break out a calculator.
Yeah, I got it. 54. We're good.
Okay. All right. And now let's take away the other dropbacks. So if he had four completions, so what's
yes, yeah, so we're down to 26.
Well,
so 54. So you know, two. The answer is two. It's going to be 54 yards on 26 dropbacks that matter. So it's a, you know, that's two would be 52. So it's 2.0.
All right. So that's not bad, right? On those other plays, defend, you know, as far as defending the pass goes. But then you can stop this and say, other than that, how did you enjoy the play, Mrs. Lincoln? You know,
right.
I mean,
that is right. Because if it was one, you wouldn't do it. But if it was four, you know, it's a problem.
And then that just goes back to tell you that those damn home run touchdowns, right? I mean, that's the biggest aspect here. I mean, they held their running backs to, well, let's see, 3 point. I mean, didn't they have a flip? I guess they considered that flip to who was it? Cobb, a pass there. So 80 total yards rushing. Subtract the Hundley, that's 74. I mean, they held him to right at about 3 yards per carry, and their longest run of the game was 12 yards. So yeah, it felt like, and we'll have to look what I haven't totaled up the successful runs, David. As far as
it felt like it to me that the Packers were playing ahead of the chains a lot.
Well, here's the thing: they were by staying in the game early on, they were able to stay committed to the running game, right? So, And how many times have we said, "Boy, if the Steelers could 14-0 a team in the first quarter and a half, how different would the opposing offense play from that period on?" So, it did feel like the running game was successful, kind of in key moments, if you will. But more than anything, you know, I think it goes back to the four or five pass plays that they had there. So Cameron Hayward should be in the Pro Bowl. How many times have we said that this year?
He's not going to make it. I don't think. Now, he's close to double digit sacks. I agree he should be in. But the problem is, this is the position he plays is a sack number position. That's not his. It's one of his responsibilities, and he's doing a hell of a job. I think he's up to 9 now, a career high. And double digits is a big deal. And Chris Collinsworth propped for him last night, so maybe that gets him some more attention. But it is going to be tough for him to make it.
Before we go talk about the offense, and Lord knows they deserve to be talked about, I mean, weakest link on the Steelers' defense right now.
Well, I mean, who you want to pick out of the secondary? I mean, I know Sean Davis, we gave him some heat early in the season and he played better. But Sean Davis not playing well. Mike Mitchell didn't have a good game. And, you know, the corners each gave up a touchdown. I mean, pick your guy out of the group. I mean, I probably put Artie because the mental mistakes are really troublesome because, you know, he's out there and those lead to touchdowns. I don't know. I mean, might be your first or second round pick from last year.
I would go Artie. I would go Artie right now. I mean, look, Cody's a backup, right? I mean, once Hayden gets back, that you know he's back in there. So, you know, I don't want to put too much on a guy that's your second teamer, if you will. So, I would go Artie. And look, Sean hasn't been great, but Sean's made some steps in the right direction, I feel, this year, whereas Artie really is not, we're, you know, not taking steps forward.
Okay, so the defense, not great, not a great performance. The offense, it was a great performance. Now, again, it's kind of the opposite here, is the defense, you know, they gave up the big plays. The offense, they did everything right, except they turned it over 3 times. And, you know, you look at it, you almost, in this type of performance, you almost just excuse it. Ben played his best half of football last week against the Titans, and it was by far better than anything, except maybe the first half against the Bengals. We talked about it, you know, ad nauseum. Ben played his best game, I think, you know, clearly in this one, in terms of accuracy, throwing the ball, using the whole field, stepping up in the pocket, climbing the pocket, doing all the things you need to do, running the ball a little bit. I mean, it was a really, really, really good game from Ben. I mean, the touchdown throws, you're not going to throw to how much I hate the fade, Dave. I know you're not a huge fan. It wasn't exactly a fade to AB, but that throw, you can't throw it better than that. You can't throw it better than he threw it to Bryant. You can't throw the whole shot better than he threw it to AB. I mean, he was great. You know, even with the 2 interceptions, he was great.
Yeah, and people, if you look at the stat line, you're going to say, the 2 interceptions, this, and maybe the completion percentage probably you would think maybe should be a little bit higher. He made throws where only his wide receiver is going to catch the ball, and those were on the money. And one of those incompletions was that little flip to Le'Veon Bell. Okay, Bell just didn't expect it to come. That could have very easily turned into a completion there. The one that was behind AB, I think it was on a 3rd down play. It looked like it was behind, but he was on the same page, I think, with AB. He thought he was going to fly.
Oh yeah, I think AB was flat footed at that point, and Ben just tried to throw him open to one side, and the defender had his back turned, was square to AB, and grabbed him. But yeah, I thought he threw it the right spot.
Yeah,
I thought it was a good throw.
I have no problem with that. The 5 to 6 drops in the game obviously is not a statistic that shows up on a game book stat sheet. There were some very, very catchable balls in there, especially early on in the game. You know, Rodgers and Martavis Bryant. But I thought He looked a lot more decisive with his throws. He attacked the middle of the field with some good throws. The throw to Justin Hunter in the corner may be a tad outside, but if Justin Hunter wants to see the field more, he has to make those plays, and he did not. That could have just as easily been a touchdown, as easy as it was an incompletion. The throw to Bryant was a result of probably Martavis Bryant's best route of the year, if you ask me, to get off, the ability to get over the top, the throw on the money, and then, you know, late in the game, however much
dividing the praise.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they said the two. I'm losing track of a word here, but on, you know, making it up on the fly, if you will, on those final drive.
Ad-libbing,
that's what I'm looking for. Whatever. Oh, those are some great throws. Really were some great throws. And then, of course, I mean, when you have a guy like AB, you know, you hate to say.
He makes up for, you know, when things aren't perfect, he certainly can fill in the difference.
And make no mistake, he was going to go to that guy regardless during the game, and he should in those final couple of drives. And I think really what's going to get not talked about so much in the post-game analysis here is what Le'Veon Bell did after the catch. 88 yak yards is what we have him down for after the catch. That's a lot of hidden yardage there. And, boy, he made a lot of guys miss after a few of those catches that turned into some nice gains on some key downs. There was like a second in, 20 or something, where he got, 13 or 14 of those yards back and all. That kind of stuff. So I think that's not going to be talked about either. But overall, I mean, look, top to bottom, I thought that was Ben's most complete game of the season. For sure, and the guy has not lost. Good pocket presence as well, too. It looked like he really, outside of him holding the football too long on maybe one of those sacks where he had probably could have dumped it up
deep in his own territory.
I think Le'Veon Bell was the guy over the middle there. Outside of that, I thought he showed some great pocket poise, stepped up nicely into the pocket several times. And look, nobody likes to see Ben lumber. The way he lumbers sometimes, but sometimes that's the best option there. And
the thing is, and this is key, is he hasn't seen that kind of defense very often. Again, we saw, you know, you hear me talk about this all the time, that I have this, you know, firm belief that Ben plays so much better against man defenses. And, you know, some of that's because of the work Antonio Brown does, but you know, what he sees there is, and you see this again, when you get that angle from behind the quarterback, is guys, if you're playing man, You're playing zone, you're covering a zone, you're watching the quarterback a lot more. You're playing man, you're watching your receiver, you're plastered onto him. And they played, you know, a good bit of man, it looked like. And when Ben can see guys all running and nobody looking at him and not having a spy in the middle of the field, which was often the case, or having a, you know, playing underneath with a linebacker coverage, then he's got, you know, breaks that the pocket, and he's got, you know, 8 to 10 yards. And he did that, and he should do that. We saw more of that in this game. Then we've seen all, you know, three carries for 25 yards with a long of 14. They were all good runs.
Yes. It's better than getting sacked, right? And it's better than forcing one where it doesn't go. So like I said, I mean, it's not something you don't want to make it a habit out of Ben, you know, scampering. He's still more nimble than Dan Marino was late in his.
Sure, Dan had that ruptured his Achilles. He couldn't move.
But there was one or two times where he looked like old Ben was running in concrete. But look, sometimes that's the option there. And once again, you know, as long as he doesn't get himself injured there, you know, taking off once or twice a game sometimes is a necessary evil.
I know, and you know, it's hard to believe that when we talk about offensive contributions that Le'Veon Bell is going to be third, you know, when he has 183 yards from scrimmage. But I do think he's third because Antonio Brown, you know, the extraordinary stuff he does. A guy who lives in San Francisco was emailing me this morning saying, you know, it's just amazing what he does. And I don't think we take it for granted because, you know, every game it seems like he makes a catch that was better than the last. And, you know, I think the catch that he made on the 2 yard line before the touchdown catch he had, the 1 yard touchdown, is kind of forgotten because of the catch he made on the sideline at the end of the game. I mean, that catch he made on the 2 was insane again. And then the fact, watching that play live, There's just, first of all, I didn't know that he held on to the ball, and there's no way I thought he got his feet in bounds. And look, you know, we there's now, because of super slow-mo and everything, you know, we control of the ball for a receiver, if he ends up holding it the rest of the way, is literally they call control of the ball the second it touches his hands, which is, you know, probably not really what control is, but it's fine. It's consistent in terms of how they do that. But the ball, he almost never juggles the ball. And Michelle Tafoya asked him after the game, and he just said, you know, relied on my technique, you know, what we work on, you know, track the ball. I was able to track the ball the whole way, and he did. And obviously, you know, when it hits his hands, he catches it. And the fact that he had both feet in was insane. That basically won the game for him. I mean, that was the play that was the difference to get him in a position to try to win the game. So, spectacular showing.
I would have bet $100 of your money that was not a completion when that happened live.
I would not have taken the bet because I agreed with you. It's just there was no way he got his foot down.
Right, and you look at the replay. You look at the first kind of replay. You think, oh yeah, he did. He got him down.
He did. Yeah.
It happened. It's almost like natural. It's almost like a natural reflex of his to drag that one foot. You know. So in other words,
ball hits his hands. Make sure both feet are touching something.
I guess all you need to look at with him is did that foot closest to the line, was that in? And that's really all you have to see, you know, because from now on you should assume that the other one's dragging along. Absolutely fantastic. Once again, the running game, the deeper they got into the game, it looked like they started to wear them down against the run. The Bell fumble. That really could have ended up being something that we would be talking more about today, had they not won. The final play look at what they were able to get accomplished in that short amount of time. There's absolutely no reason to not think that at any given point of any given game, if there's 30 seconds on the clock, regardless of the where they had the ball, that they should not be attacking to try to get three or what have you. They just proved that you can move a football in a small amount of time there. The play the Bell at the end there. You know, you're thinking, oh, Lord, you just lost 2 yards there. But Boswell bailed him out. And I didn't think he was going to make that 53-yard kick. I got to be honest with you. I wasn't confident that he was going to make that kick when he went out there. But he made it, and that's what he's paid to do.
Yeah, he made it. He made it comfortably. I mean, certainly distance-wise, he made it comfortably. It was inside that left post by not a ton. It wasn't down the middle. But, you know, if you saw the camera angle again from underneath, he cleared it by five. Say, look, I never understand Mike Tomlin not kicking 50, 49, 51-yard field goals. To me, they're better than 50% odds with Boswell. So, and the conditions, I still will say this now. I think the conditions at Heinz Field are way overblown. I realize there haven't been a ton of long field goals there, but let's talk about a couple things that went on here. One, first of all, in the late game situation, there are a couple things here that I just absolutely would crucify the Packers for. One is trotting, you know, as much as I like long field goals, trotting Mason Crosby out there for a 57-yard field goal is insanely stupid. You agree with that?
Yes, especially in that venue.
Okay, so insanely stupid for him to put him out there. That was one. Number two was there's no way with two timeouts, a minute 20 left, and the ball on my own 18-yard line, if I'm Mike McCarthy, I'm trying to win that game with Brett Hundley. Now, I get it. This is to me, this isn't black and white. I get that maybe you do want to do that. But, man, if you want to try and win it there, why didn't you go for two when you tied the score at 28-27, made it 28-27? Why didn't you go for two there? If you think your guy from your own 18, your young quarterback, is going to be able to take you down the field with two timeouts, I think you're crazy. So then a bunch of things happen here. One is, you know, Watt gets the sack, and the Steelers got a break on the non-helmet for helmet because had they called it, you can't argue with it. It was definitely helmet to helmet. So the Steelers got a break there. And then the Steelers don't use their timeout. I think Mike should have used it there. Now it's second and 16, and you're going to get the ball back. And Mike let, you know, basically 40 seconds run off between plays. So I thought Mike made a mistake there. And then obviously Jamal Williams made a massive mistake running out of bounds on that short pass. Well, I didn't think the Packers should have thrown the ball because that puts that at risk. And then they did throw it. They play a safe pass. And Williams goes out of bounds. And right there, you know, you can argue that that cost them the game. So I think there was a bunch of – I thought personally, Dave, there were a bunch of bad coaching decisions, you know, more so by the Packers. I thought, you know, Mike McCarthy made three bad coaching decisions. I just thought Mike Tomlin should have used his timeout after the sack. Turns out they used it after the second one, and then, you know, they get the opportunity to win the game, and they did.
You're trying to say that Brett Hundley's not Ben Roethlisberger.
Good God, that's exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah,
I mean, I would agree. Would you have knelt there? I mean, not necessarily kneel. The Steelers had two timeouts. The Steelers had all three timeouts at that point. So, you know, if you run on first down, or you know, the Steelers didn't call it after the sack. So there's no reason to believe if you had just run for 2 yards. Now, if I were the Steelers, I would have waited until second down myself. If you had gained 2 yards, but you lost six, I would have called it. But if you just run for 2 yards, you're down to 40 seconds, and at that point, you really do have to just play for overtime. Mike McCarthy screwed that up, and I don't know if I'm going to read the Green Bay papers, you know, when we're done with this to see what they're saying. But he should be getting a fair bit of criticism.
All right, if the drive starts at your own 28 instead of your 18, does that what yard line do you
get? Yeah, that's a good question. I would say for the 35 for sure. Between the 25 and the 35, I'm doing what the Steelers do. I'm running a wraparound draw or something and deciding after the first down play what I do. But I'm running a conservative play on first down that keeps the clock moving. So that would be my goal on first down between the 25 and the 35. And if I'm inside my 25, I am not with Brett Hundley. I'm not trying to win the game. If I'm Ben, with a minute 20 left and two timeouts, I'm trying to win the game unless I'm maybe inside my own 50. I would do the conservative play call still, but I'd be a little more freewheeling. But with Hundley, not a chance. Not a chance.
Yeah, and I think your mentality, especially where what has transpired in the game, where you're at, where you start possession there, I think that your mentality has to be, and this probably could be considered a loser mentality, worst case scenario is this is going into overtime.
Yeah, you can't lose that game in regulation with the ball when you get the ball with a minute 20 left. You got to recognize that there's a possibility, you know, you're not in a great spot if something good doesn't happen on first down. And it didn't happen. Something good did not happen on first down. Something bad happened.
Right, exactly. And then, of course, Jamal.
And then your player screwed up.
Right, then Jamal.
Yeah, your player screwed up.
You know, is going to run out of bounds on a play like that. Boy, I mean, the problem is.
Well, one other thing. What did you think on the Martavis Bryant reverse?
I'm glad you brought that up, and I can't wait to see. That is one thing that I forgot to put in my notes when I on the list to talk to. Was that, boy, I cannot wait to see the end zone view of that. I thought he should have.
It looked like he had a posse coming around the side to block for him. I know a lot of people were critical of Antonio Brown for not, you know, making a block there. I got two things. One is
he should have cut that up.
He should have cut it up. And B, you're Martavis Bryant. You go one-on-one with the guy, it's your job to beat him. So maybe it all didn't go perfectly on the parts that weren't his role, but he's got a score there. He's got enough guys in front of him, and he's got, at worst, it's him one-on-one from the four. I think he chose the wrong path, and, you know, he didn't beat the guy. Good credit to the guy who made the play. Can't remember who it was, but he's got a score there.
My mind moves sort of like the Matrix. That's how slow it moves at times. I know that's kind of surprising, but seeing that in real time, when he got outside the tackle, I thought that was a touchdown. Really did. And I'm glad you brought that up. And attacking that mini corner when he came into the game on that touchdown was, I mean, how do you not do that, right? I mean, go look at the size differential there. Forget the name of the kid that he beat on that play. But wasn't it after King left or something? One of the corners had left on that side.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, the guy had the arm problem or shoulder problem. Yeah, he came in and got off the line. And again, perfect throw. Good catch.
What was his name? Over the shoulder catch. Was it Hawkins? Was that the
kid? I can't remember.
Number
28, King. It wasn't King. 28. Whoever 28 is.
All right. So yeah, definitely great move to go after him in that situation there. Geez, we haven't even talked about really the play of the offensive line, which pass protection was.
Well, how about the fact that there's all hell breaks loose when the Steelers don't score. First of all, they were three for three in the red zone or two for two, but all hell breaks loose when they don't score touchdowns in the red zone. And then when they don't run the ball, remember they scored, they went for it on fourth down. Kudos to Mike. I love going for it on fourth down around the goal line. Nice play call by Todd Haley. It worked. So it's a good play call. Simple as that. Those are good play calls. They run that inside pass that they've run with Juju. They've run it with Jesse James. This time Xavier Grimble gets a touch on the ball and he gets in relatively easily. So they convert that fourth down. That was that's big early in the game to get that. And then, they threw to AB on that. So they scored from the one twice on passes. So let's, when we go back and we evaluate going forward, when the Steelers get stopped and people are talking about why not give it to your guy, remember that, they've had some success passing and they converted a nice 2-point conversion where Ben wanted to go to AB. There was a linebacker in the way. He waited for AB to clear the linebacker behind the linebacker, which he did finally, and then an easy 2-point conversion. So they did some nice stuff throwing the ball around the goal line.
And you know what? Fan base is so result orientated that if that flip pass to Grimble, which is a play they've had success with this year quite a bit, doesn't work on that fourth and goal situation, imagine how much crucifixion's going on right now. And because it did work, there's really no talk about it, right?
Not even brought up.
It just goes to show you how results driven. If that thing fails, it's a bad play call. Fire Todd Haley again.
It's bad results driven, because if it's good results, it's not discussed. It really isn't. I mean, here we're an hour and 8 minutes into the podcast. There we go.
Situational football, as you stated, 3 for 3 in the red zone. That will kind of get lost in the wash this week, as will the fact that the team was 8 of 13 on third downs. I thought they did a better job of keeping themselves, and I haven't looked at the numbers, of staying in more manageable third downs. And, that Ben obviously was a lot better in this game on every down, not just third downs in general. So I thought that was huge overall. So, yeah, we'll get into more of what we saw and didn't see and good and bad on the Wednesday podcast. We'll, of course, have Paul Daner again, hopefully, previewing the Bengals-Steelers game coming up. I'm sure there's going to be a lot more talk about Mike Tomlin and his comments about team being a Super Bowl team and the Patriots and yada, yada.
Let me throw one more thing out about the Steeler receivers and the drops. Anything you want to add here? Martavis, Eli, Jesse. Anything you want to add about receiver play? Obviously, Juju didn't play, and because he didn't practice all week, I mean, it's not a layup that he's going to be back this week in my mind. We'll see. But any thoughts on that?
Yeah, these guys. I mean, look, they want opportunities to deserve more playing time. You got to make those plays. I mean, Jesse, obviously, he's not going to get sat down or anything, but, Eli did have a big grab in that game, but you can't overlook the ones that went through his hands either. And Martavis, that game, his game didn't start off great either, I didn't think.
How about Martavis on the kick return? 41 out to the 41. How about that? That was a surprise for all of us.
Yeah, absolutely. That was a surprise.
Where were the Packers on that play, by the way?
Look,
it was kicked to the sideline, and he just waltzed up the sideline.
Yeah, just look, I mean, whatever they were doing beforehand wasn't working, so I'm all for anything other than beating your head up against the wall, with repetition with things that you know probably aren't going to work. It was nice to see Martavis have a combative catch, I think, in this, what was it, the second half of the game. I don't know if that was a second or third down play, but that was nice to see. Once again, his game outside of the kick return, as a receiver, I didn't think started off great. But I'm always a fan of getting him involved in the game early on, and maybe the kick return, helped in that matter. Eli, good route runner, inconsistent.
Eli had, here's the thing. Eli didn't have a hands problem last year. And, looking at some of the drops, one of the things you'll see with some receivers is they'll jump when they don't need to jump. Now, the ball in the middle of the field, Eli probably did have to go up for it. But he's had some trouble in the, you hit Eli in stride, and he seems to be, we haven't seen kind of this issue. Maybe I'm making this up. We'll have to go back and look. If it's, when his feet are off the ground, he has more issues because, sometimes receivers like to use their body. They get up off the ground so that they can cushion it inside their body. That wasn't the case with him last night or the one he dropped in the end zone a couple weeks ago. I don't know. I mean, look, I've been a fan of the guy, but obviously if you're going to be dropping passes, on a weekly basis, you're not going to get targets. And he wasn't dropping passes early in the season when the targets, targets went away. It wasn't because of drops. I don't know what it was, but he wasn't getting them. Maybe he was dropping them in practice, but now he's dropping them when it matters. And that's obviously not good, but he is, for lack of a better alternative. He is the number four guy when Juju's healthy.
Yeah, and then Justin Honor, like I said, you can make arguments why that ball can and can't be caught. But, if he wants more than one target and wants to dress for some games moving forward, you got to make that catch, and he didn't. So.
And one roster move we failed to mention, Terrell Watson gets cut, maybe gets signed back, today to the practice squad or tomorrow to the practice squad. Fitz Toussaint back. Look, Watson, he had a nice preseason. I know everybody talks about, oh, my gosh, he's going to get picked up off the waivers if they cut him. Watson had been with three teams before the Steelers got him in the preseason. Yes, he did some nice things, but he had a very limited defined role as a short yardage back. And the Steelers have decided, obviously, I don't know that it's clear, but, that Le'Veon Bell, they'd like to maybe use him in those situations. And Watson doesn't bring that much on special teams. Fitz is a better special teams player, a more versatile player. So
better pass protector too. Second best.
Well,
pass
can be on the field. Yeah, absolutely.
Right. Second best pass protector and running back on the team is Fitzgerald Toussaint. So maybe that comes into play. I bet they were hoping to get Toussaint on the field a little bit last night. Maybe looking ahead, thinking, okay, Toussaint can get out there for five or six plays, and they not necessarily have to be runs. Well, obviously that didn't happen there. One final note that I have on my notes to cover with you: Mike Mitchell beating the Alex Smith rap.
Yeah, so for those who didn't see it, apparently the fine to Mitchell, and this is a little bit confusing, the number that came out was a number that we've really never seen before, as far as I can remember, Dave, $40,000+, $43,000 fine for the hit on Alex Smith. Just seemed kind of out of proportion with his fine history and whatever. And, I know a lot of people talk about, things he's done that weren't fined, so okay, or even penalized. But we talked about it. Both Dave and my view was really hard to say that he did that intentionally, because he not only does Chicolo push his shoulder, which was odd, but they lock up feet or tangle feet, and he falls towards Smith and not really at Smith. And Smith's reaction and post-game comments really lit this thing on fire. I mean, it was – you don't see that much from Alex Smith, but he was demonstrative on the field and demonstrative after the game, saying he thought it was intentional. All those things would obviously work against Mike Mitchell. And, a couple of weeks later here, no fine, no intent, that's as clean as that. That's as exonerated as you can be. So coming off a bad game, Mitchell, I think in this one, let's just put that one out there that he got cleaned up on this. And he went in his comments, I thought, with respectfully, and I think he even used that word, he went after Tony Gonzalez and Tim Hasselbeck, both of whom went after him in a pretty aggressive way at various times on national television.
So my Zapruder film breakdown of that play ended up being correct. And when I get all that out of all this, Mike Mitchell blocked me on Twitter for some reason recently. I don't know why. Look, I've said it several times. Mike Mitchell's not going to the Pro Bowl this year, but I think some of the immediately after that play, touchdown the other night or last night, first one that looked like Artie Burns, people were trying to put the blame on Mike Mitchell right away, and you know, we'll see what ends up coming out. Like we said, but the initial breakdown of that play was that, you know, I don't see how in the hell people can initially think that one's on Mike Mitchell there. Obviously, needs to make the look. He's missed some tackles this year. He's missed some tackles since he's been with the Steelers. Period. Some that, you know, probably should have prevented some touchdowns. Does he deserve some criticism for his overall play this year and previous years? Absolutely, he does. But look, the guy knows where to be on the field. This might very well end up being his last season. But the Steelers are not. Right, you know, they're not losing games, period. I mean, they've lost two, obviously, but I think very few you can go back through and say, boy, the Steelers lost this game because of Mike Mitchell type thing there. So, look, we defend him when he deserves to be defended, and we criticize him when he deserves to be criticized. And yes, that hit on Smith maybe can be construed a little bit sketchy, but I think without a doubt on top of it, you can't take away from the fact that Chickalow did step on his feet and did somewhat trip him up. So and people tend to forget still. He was still fined, what, over $48,000, I think, for his hit on Charkandrick West late in that game, which was the right call.
Yeah, and just one last thing. You know, we talk about, obviously, we spent a lot of our time highlighting what the Steelers did wrong in this game because, you know, the what they do well is the easy stuff. And I think we gave hopefully the right amount of recognition and praise to Ben and AB and Le'Veon Bell for what they did. I'll tell you, the catch that AB made in that last drive to the 27, whatever the gain was out, to put the Steelers in position to try to win the game was an extraordinary catch. The next play, if the Steelers defense had given up that play to Antonio Brown, a 14-yard sideline route with, you know, less than 30 seconds to go, I would be absolutely apoplectic. And it was the Steelers. There were 17 seconds to go, and the Steelers are on the Packers on the Packers 47. So, you know, they do have a timeout so they can use the middle of the field. But, you know, the coverage was the corner had safety help above him, and he lets Antonio Brown run a sideline route for 14 yards, not for 7 yards, for 14 yards. And it only takes, unbelievably, 4 seconds, and the Steelers get in field goal range. I mean, that, boy, you want to talk about some bad defense. That's some bad defense.
I'm going to shut up right here, else I'm going to have us pushing an hour and a half here. You can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. You can follow the show at Terrible Podcast. You can email us your hate mail, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. Tell us how Mike Tomlin's teams always play down to other teams and how the Patriots are going to annihilate the Steelers in week 15 and how all this is not going to matter here in several more weeks. And if we get around to it, we'll answer you. If we don't, the hell with you. You can for the other 2% of you, if you want to go to SteelersDepot.com, hit that donate button up right navigational bar. It would be greatly appreciated as well. In all seriousness, we appreciate you listening, because if nobody was listening, we wouldn't be doing this three times a week on top of it there. So David, I'm sure we'll have a lot more to talk about, maybe some drama on Wednesday as well, and I'll talk to you then.
Yeah, as always, hope you enjoyed that one. Wasn't what we expected, but the Steelers are 9-2. Thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.